Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to the Dunk Time AFL Podcast live show, August 2022. We are coming to you from Wayne Jackson Studios. My name is Michael Chamberlain, and joining me is a man who's been appointed to the panel to pick the new coach for Essendon. It is Adam Rosenbach.
Yes, thank you, Dunk Timers. Yes. It didn't get a huge announcement during the week, but I have been added to the panel, and I've already chosen who I think should be coaches. We're going to go with co-coaches.
Okay.
Is my goal going forward for Essendon. Mm-hmm. So on the panel is going to be Mick Malthouse. Uh-huh. I mean, he said they were going to win the flag this year, so let's see how good a fucking coach he really is. Mark Neild is going to be on the coach.
Okay.
Because I reckon anyone who said at a juniors game...
Redacted.
We should also have...
What? Did he actually say that?
Yes, he did say that, yes.
Was he twitching while he did it? Or?
Let's assume he was. Obviously, Rodney Eade we'll have in there, but yep. We'll mic him up so you can hear him at the ground.
Oh, perfect. I like that
so
idea.
So when he's
yeah.
shouting out whoever the fucking new Will Minton is, yep. We'll find out about it. Also, I'm going to be on there as the ghost of Alan Jeans.
Okay.
Just going a little bit left field there. And Bomber Thompson's housemate, Bang Bang, is also going to be... on the panel, so just for a bit of discipline.
He'll be doing recoveries on a Sunday morning.
Yeah, absolutely. And a little bit of a twist, we're going to have as the runner is going to be Ross Lyon. Right? Now, you think what Dane Zorko said to Harrison Petty was bad on the field. Wait till fucking Ross Lyon gets out to you. You're going to know you're alive. You're going to wish you were dead.
It's
a new leaf for Essendon, so it's going to be great.
2023 is going to be massive.
It's going to be huge. You're going to love it.
Fit them all in the coach's box.
Yeah.
Hey, we obviously had the tragedy last Sunday when...
I don't applaud that, you motherfucker.
So,
how many Carlton fans are here? Yeah! Fuck it out.
We just won in the BFL! Yeah.
That's taking the edge off then. We're back!
So I was watching it on my phone, essentially, on the way to the airport, because I've got a lot going on. And and I watched the final minute out the front of the AFL kitchen and bar at the airport, actually. And can I just get a kind of random pause? Who thought it was the funniest fucking thing that's ever happened in my entire life?
Fuck, I hate you so much.
Because we've been doing this pod since 2014. In that time, Carlton's never been in the finals.
We're in there for 22 weeks this year.
I mean, I was about to say that. You're in the top eight for 22 weeks.
Yeah.
My team's won two premierships. Don't want to talk about it. Because we didn't do it in 2013 and we won three. Anyway, you know the rules. And so you actually, during the week, you write for Front Bar, football show on Channel 7. And I don't know why I said that. But... they did about 15 minutes on the disaster of Carlton, right?
Yeah, okay. They really did.
And then you would have had to write jokes for that.
Yes, I fucking had to do that. Yeah. I had to relive that last, 2 minutes about, I reckon, 12 times I would have seen that.
Have you seen the footage of Andy Marr from SEN?
Yes, I had to watch that.
If anyone has seen the footage of SEN, Andy Marr, Elliot kicks the goal, they get in front by point, and then Jared Waitley basically calls, the last minute and a half. And Andy Marr does not say a word.
So he's not doing his job.
He almost expects him to pull a noose out of his bag and just finish the job. It was horrifying.
Yeah.
So you wrote the joke that you think Essendon should merge with Carlton. Is that yours?
Yes, that was mine.
And how many other jokes would you write?
A couple of hundred. Yeah, I'm very good.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Absolutely brutal.
It was brutal, but it's sort of I guess you could kind of say it was cathartic. Like, I saw it that many times that it, you know, I was already broken. So you're just like, you're just watching it and just going, oh, well, what the fuck? Like, at least the sort of thing that I could take out of it, at least it wasn't a fucking grand final. Like, imagine a St Kilda fan.
I find it very funny you think Callum's going to make a grand final, mate. That's...
But imagine a St Kilda fan every time they see that fucking Matthew Scarlett toe poke.
Yeah, sure.
It would break them inside.
Yeah, yeah.
And that makes me feel joy.
Or the mill.
So, you know, I can find joy in other things.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Gotcha. So your idea of, like, rehabbing your mind is just going on YouTube and watching clips of other teams losing dramatically.
Yeah, yeah. But you also, you recalibrate. Now I can focus on, hopefully, Collingwood going out in straight sets.
Yeah.
You know, you readjust. You readjust. You find new villains to hate. So...
It's going to be massive. Hey, we've got a little cheeky little treat right here. Okay?
Yeah.
So you've been following our journey regarding chicken salt. So I think about maybe 5 years ago, Adam and I just go kind of almost a simultaneous thought. We were like, why is there a sign behind the goals at Adelaide Oval that says chicken salt?
And we couldn't work that out.
Well, no, we found out because people messaged in. Said it was dark red writing. It said Matani. It didn't come up on the TV. So it said Matani chicken salt. Because we were like, it's weird. Like, what? Just chicken salt. Like, why not just have, like, you know, sauce? Like, and so we found out it was like actually an ad for Matani chicken salt. And so from then on, obviously, we all know chicken salt is the greatest salt in the world. And Junk Time is out there throughout the years. Have been sending us, like, tweets of pictures of chicken salt on special at supermarkets and the like. And then to our... absolute wonder, probably a couple of months ago, Big Shed Brewery in Adelaide actually made a chicken salt flavoured beer, okay?
Which absolutely no one fucking asked for. Like, it wasn't like people were banging down, when are you making the chicken salt? All right, we're getting to it.
We're in the lab, we're in the lab.
We got people out there.
Kingy's in here with us. Yeah. And so very luckily Steve, a friend of the show in Sydney, gave us 4 cans of this delightful froth.
Yes. Now, Big Shed, we got in touch with Big Shed and they said that they would send some to us and they didn't. And I reckon they're about to find out that that is a very fucking bad idea to cross us.
So we're going to crack these open. We crack these open?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So it's, what is it, 4.8%. It's a German-style ghost beer.
Yeah.
Which I'm not familiar with.
Now, I'm going to break my little celiac diet right here, like I did last week when I walked into the AFL Kitchen and Bar looking for some good content, and I had a premiership pepperoni at the AFL Kitchen and Bar, which, by the way, is fucking delicious. Like, go down to the AFL Kitchen and Bar when you're leaving Melbourne.
And then proceeded to shit yourself on the Jetstar flight on the way home.
In my celiac world, I did have to go to the supermarket and buy some laxatives and just had a very, very easy Monday. Just don't leave home. Comes on you quick. Now, should we pour it out of this can? Oh, you.
I've cracked this one, so I'll have a smell.
Let me put this one back in there.
All right, that's not fucking right for a beer.
Because I don't want people. I don't want people drinking out of the same cup.
All right. Okay, so it's a very cloudy, very light, almost like a wheat beer. That's fucking heaps, mate. I'm not drinking that.
Comes out of the can.
Oh fuck, that doesn't smell.
Okay, let me.
It's got like kind of a fucking weird gravy smell to it, which is not what you want in a fucking beer.
My first whiff is that it smells like chicken gravy.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
Oh no!
Oh god! Fucking hell! All right, here we go. So. This is great. All right, so chicken salt beer. Are we ready?
It generally has like chicken gravy. Smell.
Aroma. All right, here we go.
Okay, here we go. Okay, I'm going in. Okay, celiac. Drink a beer.
Oh, God. So imagine you'd been...
Okay.
All right. So imagine you'd been around 13 blokes who'd been eating chicken salt chips all day, and then they bukkake'd you.
Big shout out to Big Shed. Friend of the show.
Not friend of the show.
Really actually does smell like, you know when you cooked a chicken, like you cooked a roast chicken, you take it out and then like the kind of remains, like
the bottom of the pan.
Of,
yeah.
Actually fuck smells up. Like that, and then you go in. I actually don't see the chicken salt in this at all. I don't feel that at all.
You feel more gravy?
I feel more gravy. Anyway, well, actually, at the end of the show, we did say to people in the front row, we'll palm it off. You don't want to have it now.
Yeah. But like after that glowing review.
We'll give as many people a sample as we can. I've got my cups there, but we'll do that at the end of the show. We'll keep them cold, but I'll put these one down.
Oh, you're going to finish it. What's fucking wrong with you? That's because you enjoy it, but...
Ah, oh, come on, mate. You go to one Catholic school. Okay, we fucked around too much.
Right.
We got a very fucking special guest coming up. No need for a big introduction. Please work on stage. The legendary Matthew Lord!
Welcome.
Thank you. I was going to yell out, harden up, you blokes, but I drink Bacardi Breeze and vodka cruisers, so I couldn't really say
Matthew,
that.
Do you want to give it a sniff, give it a taste, like, yeah, see what you think. What's your taste?
Shit house. I'm not really a beer man, but yeah, can take the taste of chicken.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? Yeah. So you're a breezer man. What's your favourite colour? Are you a guava? What are you, pineapple?
I'm a guava. Yeah, I can stomach them all, to be honest. And it was hard for a lot of the boys to take when you come in the mid-90s and they're hard-nosed and I'm Dean Wallace, Mark Harvey, those types. And then I'm sneaking the Bacardi breezers at the end of the Mad Mondays, but they come around to me after a while.
Can I quickly give the tale of the tape for Matthew Lloyd? 270 games, 928 goals, 3 Coleman medals, 5 All-Australian, 2000 Premiership, Mark of the Year, Goal of the Year. And I think the jewel in your crown was you were the AFL Rising Star nominee around 1996. That's probably the biggest.
I'd love to take those stats. You said 928 goals. It's an extra.
26.
It's an extra 2 you've given me. I'd love to claim it, but I'm an honest man. 926 it was.
Okay, I'll send a very angry letter to Wikipedia then.
Lloydy changed that himself.
And I was listening to you talk about Carlton too.
Oh, yeah.
I despise Carlton. But my brother's the head of footy at Carlton.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's part of me like wanting to win now, which I don't like.
Yeah.
And your dad played for them.
Played for Carlton too, yeah.
I had no idea about that. Doing research on you, like I have no idea that your dad played. Was like 20-odd games?
20, yeah. So growing up, the father-son rule was 20 games and dad played 29. So my whole childhood, I thought if I'm good enough, I'll play for Carlton. And I went to the 93 grand final when they played Essendon. I was desperate for Carlton to win. But then the rule was changed to 50 games a year or two before I was ready to go. You ended up with Brendan Favola, so that's on you.
Now, you grew up in my hood. Like, you grew up in Avondale Heights, is that right?
I did.
Did you play for Avondale in
the
EDFL?
Yeah, my whole junior footy, yeah.
Yeah, right. So I played for Strathmore. Yes. Now, did you ever get bashed by Moonee Valley? Like, when you played against
petrified.
Them?
Petrified. Absolutely petrified.
Yeah, so Moonee Valley were like the hard nuts in our area. The team, like, under 16s, the blokes would drive to the game. fucking beards and stuff. They just knocked off
tattoos.
Security, and they would kick the fucking shit out of you.
Yeah. So they were let out from, I'm trying to think what the...
Tirana.
Tirana, yeah, they're from the kids, what do you call it, kids jail?
Juvenile.
And so we'd be saying to the umpires, make sure you've checked their fingernails, make sure you've checked their socks. We were that scared of them. And one day I was filling in actually for my brother Brad's team. I was boundary umpire for them.
Yeah.
And I said, on the full, so my dad was a coach and he always would say, if it's borderline, you go Avondale's way, not any other team. So it was a call that probably could have gone Moonee Valley's way. And I said, it was on the full. He said, no, it was inside the line. I said, on the boundary jump, you just worry about getting a kick, I said to the bloke. He chased me for about 400 metres. So I knew to bite my lip against Moonee Valley next time around.
Yeah, they were fucking hard.
Oh, they were. Oh, they were brutal.
So can I ask the question, in the spirit of the TV show you're on, Essendon is a rabble. Good call, bad call? Pertinent call.
Good call. Good call, smart call, but... those decisions were the right call, I would have thought. So those hard decisions that he's made, I think maybe, like your mob, Carlton, had to make some tough ones. Whoever barracks for Collingwood in here, they were seen as a bit of a basket case this time last year. Not as bad, but president goes, coach goes, board members go, and look at what they've done this year.
So when they talk about the coteries at Essendon, how much influence do they have within, like, To you as a player, do you even think about it?
They sent us away on some good footy trips, those coaches.
Yeah, right.
But, so they do have a bit of coin. But, yes, I think the problem with Essendon is a lot of guys who, you know, donate so much money. I think it happens at most of the clubs, but they feel with the more they donate, the more they feel they've got the right to make decisions. And I think that's where Essendon have got to... they've got a process now, a new president who is not going to stand for too much of that anymore.
But these are people not in actual positions, like they're outside the club.
There's a heap of country. There's an Essendonian group, there's a Diamond Dons group, there's all these different types of group who would give the club millions of dollars a year. So obviously with that comes that they like to have a bit of power with some decisions, but yeah.
And do they help you say you've got your salary that's on the books?
Essendon's been in enough trouble, so I'm not going to fall for that one. So, no. I was never paid in a brown paper bag like your mob.
Yeah, right. Were you were never out at the hangar, were you? You were always at Windy Hill.
No, I always at Windy Hill.
Do you reckon that's hurt them a little bit, just going out there? Like, Tullamarine's pretty, soulless. No one ever to fucking go out.
It's a good question, because I look at it now and say, you know, your career, we didn't know any different when there was rats running along your gym and all that sort of thing. It was pretty ordinary at Essendon too, but because Arden Street was down the road, we looked like we had everything. I sometimes look at it. Now, we were doing our recovery in wheelie bins.
Yeah.
They're now sitting back in a swimming pool, hot colds, watching TV, for example. I sometimes think, well, how lucky are they?
Yeah.
Even though they had to take it out there. So I think they've got it pretty good despite lacking a bit of soul out there.
And I guess it's not that far, is it? And you're going against the traffic. There's positives.
Yeah, close to the airport.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty convenient. I mean, if you lived in town, you catch the Skybus out there. $19 one way, you know.
AFL kitchen and bar for lunch.
Yeah, I mean, pop in for a margarita, midfielder's margarita. So what do you kind of want to see to happen at the Bombers? Like, I mean, you know, are there particular coaches out there? Because I'm going to say as well, like, you probably have a big say in this as well in terms of your media profile, and I'm sure you got the ear of people.
Yeah, I want to see them win a final. That's what I want to see.
Yeah.
It's been 2004. I actually played in it. That's how long ago it was. Sheedy was the coach. They've won one final. I think one coach has won a final for them in, I think, 40 or 50 years. It's Kevin Sheedy. So it just shows how poor it's been. And when I walked into the club, it was all about if we don't play in a prelim, it's a failure. So I walked in as a 16-year-old and I said, unless we finish top four, to us it's a failure. Whereas now, I think... Yeah,
bottom four is
all right. Exactly right. If you get out of that, you're doing all right. So, what I want to see, I do want to see some stability at management level. You see guys like Michael Hurley retire. They retire never having won a final. Whereas I played in 18 finals, prelims, grand finals, and that was the expectation. Whereas no one at Essendon understands what success is, even at Carlton.
I have no fucking idea what success is.
I don't know. Yeah, like Cripper and these blokes, Kerno, Mackay, all good players, but don't have any success, and that's where. You look at like Joel Selwood and Tommy Hawkins, great footy club. You just get back there year after year.
Now, you lived in Scotland for a while when you were a kid.
Yeah, I did. So my dad, through his work, he was an engineer and got the opportunity to go live in Scotland. So, so the first sports I ever played were rugby and soccer. So I spent about 3 years there. And
whereabouts in Scotland?
I lived in Edinburgh for 3 years and...
Go up to the castle? Go up to the gift shop?
Yeah, did all those things. And actually, I can't even remember, to be honest. I was a bit too young.
I remember going, the first time I went to Edinburgh Castle years ago. If you don't know, Edinburgh is like, there's a big hill with a castle on top of it.
They named it after the pub in Sydney Road.
But I remember going there for the very first time and the tour guide took us around and then the tourist said, I meant to tell you to go through the gift shop, but given this is my final day, it's an overpriced monstrosity. Do not go in there.
Now, what was it like as a... How old were you when you got to Essendon? 16, 17?
16.
16. Yeah. What was it like meeting Sheeds for the first time?
It was daunting. His first piece of advice, which I'll never forget, was, I want you to walk away from your career having paid off a house.
Yep.
And if you can do that, you pay off your second one and your third one.
How much is your house worth then?
$10 million. No, man. So Sheets was signed with that. He said that I marked a ball on my chest, and he said, go and run some 400s. And when I came back after doing four 400s, he said, why do you think you're running them for? I said, I don't know. He said, you're never to mark a ball on your chest for the rest of your time here. It's got to be out in front. And I said, oh, I've just seen James Hird do it. And he said, but he's not going to be a full forward, so you have to do it. But the most daunting thing was that I was getting ready in the number 19 locker when I first got there. And I don't know if anyone remembers who was 19 at that time. His name was Peter Somerville, a big ruckman, a plumber. He didn't like the fact that I came in as a number one draft pick. There was a bit of that going on. So next minute he's over the top of me and he's got one hand on either leg. And
he says, we might need to redact the next bit of this.
And he says to me, listen here, sweet pea. This will be the first and the last time you ever sit in the number 19 locker. You're number 18, so you don't sit here again. And as he took his hands off, he'd rubbed chewing gum in either all through my leg hairs. So all through my leg hairs. So I did. It's fair to say I didn't sit in number 19 for much longer after that.
Sounds like the opening of a Japanese porn film.
But anyway, it was different sheets. Yeah, I remember my first year. He said, I don't know who to select, you or Dean Wallace. So he said, come with me. He just kicked the ball out for half an hour. First one to get it back to him. Half an hour we're doing this for. Yeah, it was just pretty tough and brutal. Those times have certainly changed.
Is he a bit like Yoda? Like he'll kind of say something and you kind of walk away going, I don't really know what that means.
You are 100% right. Yeah. Yeah, I have no idea.
Because I remember we had Ryan Fitzgerald on the show years ago and he talked about when he met Sheedy before being drafted. Essendon showed interest. I think he went at number 5 in the draft, didn't he? And he went to a hotel and Sheedy was there. He went with his dad. And she just kind of looked at him like, you look like you want to play football. And Fitzy was like, I don't know what the fuck that means.
That's why I'm here, mate.
Oh, he definitely was, certainly was unique. But, after my parents, the biggest influence in my career.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And what about sprays? Like, could he really, like, when he went, and would he single you out in front of the group?
I remember there was this one day we were playing West Coast at Marvel and I'm blaming the way it was built. I couldn't see the footy, wasn't attacking the ball as hard as I should have. It was the sun's fault, not anything else. And at quarter time, he looked at me and he goes, and Lloyd, you're not only embarrassing yourself, you're embarrassing your mum, your dad, your brother, your sister and the 50,000 in this stadium today.
And the people of Scotland.
Yeah, the people of Scotland. And you saw the moment he said it, I could sense he regretted it.
Yeah, right.
So he was one of those guys.
Because he hadn't checked with those 50,000. Yeah, he didn't know. Yeah. Your parents definitely were, but he didn't know about that.
I mean, the guy in Railway, she didn't have anything to do with it.
But he mellowed. Certainly, I reckon for the first 4 or 5 years, it was hard, but the last 10 I had with him, he'd mellowed a lot.
So do you think that's a bit of almost an initiation in terms of, like, he goes hard at you for a few years and then once you prove yourself, he kind of eases off?
Sheeds was interesting where once you earned your stripes and you're in his best 5 or 6 players, he was okay. He was pretty good towards you. He'd look after you, but you wouldn't want to be in the last 5 or 6. You'd cop it a bit, whereas Matty Knights came in and he went the hardest. I copped it from Matty Knights.
Really?
So he lasted 2.5 years.
And you were captain.
And he lasted 2.5 years, so I got him back in the end.
Well, I mean, on that note, actually, we do have some surprise special guests. Please welcome on stage Campbell Brown and Brad Sewell.
Fucking dog. Yeah.
But you're all good with them. Like, it's football, you know.
Yeah, well, it was amazing that Campbell and I... So Brad was fine. He just shook my hand and said...
Well, he wasn't fine. He was shaking on the ground.
When he came 2-3 weeks later, he was fine.
I mean, and you know, 7 surgeries later, he was fine. Yeah, he was fine.
Yeah, once his cheekbone was reconstructed, he was all right. But I turned on the radio about 7 o'clock that night. You know, after I had to be escorted to my car by police because there were about 100 Hawthorn supporters had got under the MCG car park. And so I got escorted.
Yeah. It's like January 6th.
Yeah. So it was dark by the time I left, but I had the sun visors, I had everything, I had sunglasses on just because I'm thinking I don't want any Hawks supporter to see me on the way home. And at about 7 o'clock, I finally turned the radio on. They said, what an eventful day it's been. Campbell Brown, we'll finish with what Campbell Brown had to say. And he said, Matthew Lloyd is one of the biggest snipers the game's ever seen. We hope he plays next year because we want him. We want him. Wouldn't have spoken to Campbell for about 3 years. Everyone else was good towards me. But then I got a direct message from Campbell Brown. He said,
Meet you in the car park.
Yeah. He said it's Campbell Brown.
He said, can you bail me out? I'm in Thailand.
He goes, it's Campbell Brown. Sorry, it's Brad Sewell's Bucks Day. And he said, can I come and see you? I said, no problems. He came and saw me. And he gave me an Essendon jumper with number 18 on it. And I wrote, dear Brad, I hope you last longer on your Bucks Day than you did on the MCG. That faithful afternoon. Yeah, so that was Campbell and I had a beer that day, and we get on pretty well now.
Yeah, great. Mm, yeah.
Can I check a story from years ago? I have half a memory of this. And I think maybe your first child had been born. It was something in the paper. And you'd gone away, play interstate, and you'd shared a hotel room with another player. Can you tell if this is true, if I remember correctly? But you kind of sleepwalked, and you walked over your teammate and kind of tucked him in, going to go, quiet, baby, quiet, baby. Is that true?
No, first I've heard of it. So.
Oh, I genuinely have a memory of that. I genuinely have a memory of that.
No idea.
Wait a second, that was a dream I had last night.
No, I didn't. I roomed with Scott Lucas one day, and he snored so badly.
So you do room, you don't get your own room.
Well, after that day, they said to me, geez, that's the worst game I've ever seen you play. And I said, Lucas was like a chainsaw last night, and I got about 20 minutes of sleep, and they said, oh, you can have your own room from now on. So
the penthouse.
Yeah, so that was the end of that.
Now, let's talk about the team you had in. So 99 led into 2000. Obviously, 99 was really bad. And then 2000, did you just go out there going, we are never going to fucking drop a game? And then...
Go on.
Oh, no, I was going to say, because it just... The way that you played that year was just unbelievable. There was no chance you were never going to win that flag.
I've never seen a team where they get the ball in the back line and you go, this is going to be a goal.
Yeah.
Like, you could just run up the field and do whatever you want.
And you didn't sing the theme song after games then? You were so focused on that.
Yeah, so we lost.
I mean, Adam said it was the worst team he'd ever seen ever. But, like... Yeah.
Well, we lost the unlosable to your mob in 99.
Yep.
Yeah, so we'd beaten... Not for Vola's mate over there, is it?
Yeah. It's Feb,
is it? So yeah, we
get a drink on the tap, mate. Yeah. It's all right.
So we lost to you blokes in 99. We'd beaten them by 76 points about 4 weeks earlier, and we must have been thinking of the grand final and thought, how easy is this going to be in hindsight? And
how was Sheeds after that game?
He was brutal. The worst they say we've ever heard him, or they've heard him, was the 96 prelim when Plugger kicked that winning point.
I've actually got that written down here because he ruptured your spleen in that game. So were you maybe not in the room?
I was in a King's Cross hospital.
Dude.
Yeah. Being filled with morphine.
Yeah.
And they said,
morphine, King's Cross, off the street.
King's Cross, off the street.
And they said, it's just like a bikey showed up, said, I hear someone's crook.
Yeah, Bam Bam, I think it was. So Bam Bam, he said to me that night, so they filled me with morphine and they said, hop five times. And they said, how are you feeling? And I said, I'm feeling much better. So they said, he's right to go home. So I go home and I'm just lucky that my parents were up for the game. And they said, and they popped in, they said, we'll let you get some rest, but we'll leave the room. So I said, Mum, can you just help me get to the bathroom? I'm starting to feel crook again. Passed all this blood, and we called up Dr. Bruce Reid, who, and through all this pain, he just said to me, settle down, but have you got any shoulder pain? And I said, my shoulder's absolutely killing me. He goes, get him to the hospital, he's got a ruptured spleen. So one of the symptoms is a pain in your shoulder.
Really?
And I had a litre and a half of blood in my stomach by the time I got back to the hospital.
And what does your spleen do?
It's helps, supports, stops colds, flus. It helps you with the...
And looks after your shoulders.
Looks after, yeah. Well, it was a shoulder that knocked out Sylv many years later. So
then if you were playing a game, like how many weeks off would you need for a ruptured spleen?
It was 12. I lost 8 kilos.
Yeah.
So not a bad way if you're trying to lose weight, I suppose.
And you missed the famous Sheedy spray.
I missed the Sheedy spray and missed at the end of it all. 12 weeks it probably took me to get over, and I couldn't have contact for 6 months as well. Yeah.
And so, that was leading into 2000.
Yeah, 2000, yeah. And we were, as you touched on, so we all had, I saw Essendon have just taken off to Ibiza, which is interesting after the year they've had. And we actually had our trip cancelled, and we went straight to Essendon Grammar School and started an intense training camp. They said, you've got 2 weeks off, straight into camp.
They cancelled your trip?
They cancelled our trip.
So yeah. You'd paid for everything?
Paid for everything and...
well, yeah, paid for everything.
Inverted commas.
Yeah, yeah. And on that camp you touched on, Kevin Bartlett was invited and he said, unless you win the grand final, don't bother singing the song.
Yeah.
Like that, no win it means anything until you win that grand final. We had a tough side, a really tough side, but a skillful side. We had everything covered and teams I felt like were half beaten running down the race. That's how good we were. And then it was just pretty much you got to just get it right come finals time. And we won our first final by 25 goals against North, our next final against Carlton by 10 goals, and then the grand final by 10 goals. So it was a pretty special side to be part of.
Quite incredible, man. Quite an incredible career.
Yeah. Now, you were one of the last ones. I think Buddy would have been the last one to kick 100, but you kicked 100 a couple of times. Yeah. How much fun was that when everyone invaded the ground, like for you?
Oh, it was good fun. I was seeing blokes. I grew up with Avondale Heights. I was high-fiving. It was like a reunion. I saw some Bernard's mates down the back. They were there as well. I've had people like, you remember Matt Tilley, who was on the radio?
Yeah.
He was out there. There was a bloke that's on the project. I'm trying to think of his name, but one of the hosts, he was out there. So it was all sorts of people out there. And just to see the joy, I suppose, on the faces of guys. I grew up, James Hurd and Fletch and all these guys who are well older than me.
Yeah.
The smiles on their faces saying that someone's just kicked 100 goals. And then it was David King and Duck and Carey. I felt sorry for them because they had to stand out. They're getting abused by Essendon supporters for about 20 minutes.
I think they can take care of themselves. Yeah. I think they'll be all right.
Yeah, so that was an amazing, probably obviously from an individual perspective, it was an amazing thrill.
Yeah.
It was an amazing thrill. Closest thing to being a rock star, I would have thought.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Well, we'll let you go very shortly. Matthew, it's very kind of you. Thank you for coming along. I just got a very quick question. I'm fascinated by this.
This isn't about the baby again, is it?
No. Oh, yeah, in 2008, yeah. I ran out for Buddy's 100, and then we were the same game.
We were, and then Clarko flooded the back line.
Yeah, but then he had Ruff in the back line, but then Ruff moved out of the back line. Fev has himself to blame for not kicking 100. He chased harder in that final 5 minutes than he's ever chased in his entire life. Fuck Brendan Favola. That's what I'm saying. Fight me. Why? We'll let you go shortly, but why are you Lord O and not Lloydy? Like, I'm always wondering about that. Like, I wake up at night, I'm going to go, why is it Lord O, not Lloyd E?
It'll make a lot of sense once I explain it, but who butchers a lot of words? There was with Channel 9 for a long, long period of time.
Brownless.
Got it in one. Got it in one. So I was with, when I retired, I did 2 years with Channel 10, lost the TV rights, and then...
Was that your fault?
What's that? Potentially. I was out of it. Seven, Fox weren't interested. And then my sister just works behind the scenes at Channel 9. She said, Dermy's leaving the Sunday footy show, so there's a spot for you. So manager made the phone call. And I walked in and Bill saw me. He hadn't seen me for a number of years. He just looked a bit flustered and rattled. And he went to say Lloydy and he said, G'day, Lordo. And and then everyone like JB and obviously Gary Lyon and all those that were there go, what was that, Lordo? And that's as simple as that. It just stuck.
Billy's stupidity.
We're not the brightest us footballers, so that's not much of a great story.
I mean, if you want to hang around, we'll tell you the story why Adam's called Fuckwit. It's a very interesting story.
Very
interesting
good.
Story.
Very good.
Hey, thank you, Matthew Lord. Very, very kind of you. And
I admire
that you've been holding on to the beer the entire time, but you haven't finished it. He had one mouthful, he didn't finish it.
I'll be kind, I can give him
You don't have to finish it. Poor man, no, don't do it, mate, don't do it.
I'll have a vodka out the back.
Thank you. Thanks,
Lloyd.
Thank you.
We got a quick snap. That's very kind of you.
Matthew Lloyd, everybody. Now, we can't see into the darkness. I'm hoping Flem's here. He is? Great.
Another very special guest coming up here on the Junktown Melbourne Podcast. Please welcome Australian cricketing legend, Damien Fleming.
Good day, everybody.
Hello.
How are you?
I've been better.
Really?
Yeah. Just had a
lost for the Ashburton under 12 girls against Richmond, and it, mate, the debrief was fucking brutal.
Really?
Really brutal. Lexi, why did you go kick across goal? And Izzy, oh, why did you back your man? Yeah. And,
your coach
Poppy,
there?
Pick up your...
Your coach there or you're part of the team?
Assistant coach.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I made a decision a few years ago, don't be the coach. Because you're the one that gets the phone calls from the parents going, why isn't my girl playing there? And why that sort of stuff. So assistants, yeah, you got some control, but you don't take any responsibility.
And so you have a daughter playing the team?
Yeah, Izzy come off late with a hamstring. Mm-hmm. So we rested her up. But it's just great. You know, the girls were fantastic. And we said at the end, for me as a coach, you know, did you enjoy the footy? Did you feel like you improved, and do you want to come back next year? So they said tick to all three, and fantastic.
And they're off to Vegas now?
They're off. Actually, Mad Monday's at 7-Eleven. They got the I think the M&Ms, the frozen Coke, and then finish up with a TikTok. Yep.
Yeah, sweet.
I'll give the tale of the tape for Damien Fleming. 20 tests, 88 one day internationals, played for Australia from 94 to 2001. 209 wickets in total, top test score of 71 not out, part of the 1999 World Cup winning team. Got a hat-trick on debut, but you don't like to talk about that. I know that much.
Tough one.
And also, the jewel in the crown won silver medal at the 1998 Commonwealth Games in Kuala Lumpur.
Thank you.
And also, most importantly, and I think from now on, you'll be known as Jasmine Fleming's father.
Yeah, I hope so. Let's hope so.
So your daughter made her debut last night.
Yeah, it was fantastic. I don't know if anyone was... when I look at Marvel for the Hawks and Essendon,
yeah, it was
your
awesome.
Hawks.
It was sick. It was
awesome. What did you think? It was great atmosphere. It was originally at Port Melbourne Oval, but, you know, with 12,000 people at Marvel, that's fine, isn't it, for atmosphere and all
the whole bottom level was chock-a-block,
But we come second. Essendon were fantastic, but yeah, just a great journey, because even Jasmine, she's 17 doing year 12, you know, she gave up footy about 5 years ago because she was playing against boys and there wasn't girls' teams, so we still haven't had a generation of a girl coming through, starting in Auskick and going all the way through. That's probably 2 years away, so good on the AFL, they haven't messed around, they've got the 18 teams, you can support the club that you've always supported, but also for girls now, there's a serious pathway. And a serious pathway for 650 girls each season.
That's great. Now, you're a filthy Hawthorn supporter.
Yeah.
Is it? How did it end up that your daughter plays for them? Was that any connection through you?
Like, well, we wouldn't play for fucking Carlton. Is Daniel Harper here?
Adam.
Is Harp here? No, we Daniel Harper's the coach.
Yes,
because she was the number two pick in the draft this year.
Yeah, it's a bit different with the girls. It's not a truly national draft, so unless the girl nominates to go interstate, that doesn't happen. So Charlie Rowe,
it's compromised.
It's compromised. It is for the particularly, you know, for Adelaide, who are very strong at the moment in their under 17s and 18s. So there's only two teams they go to. So I'd imagine Adelaide, South Australian footy's pretty strong. But the number one, Mon Ham, who unfortunately hurt her knee, I hope it's not too bad, last night, she nominated Sydney, even though she's from Victoria. And so that opened up Jazz to go number one in Victoria, but number two overall. So in the end, Essendon Hawthorn as new Victorian teams, they had probably the top six choices. So we probably knew it was either going to be Hawthorn. And how would you feel about her going to Essendon?
What would you have thought? What have you thought? If she, you know, because we all love those kind of clips on YouTube and like where the club, you know, I'm doing my debut or the girls players, you know, there's one, a great one of Chris Grant's daughter, kind of, you know, giving her a box and he opens the jumper and stuff like that. If she walked into the room with a box and said, Dad, I'm making my debut. If you open that box, then there was an Essendon jumper in there.
I just reflect
like
back.
Out of the will straight away.
Well, you know, it's... That last quarter of the 1984, it's final, grand final. It's still too raw.
I don't want to talk about it.
How did we lose that Chambo?
Dude, I literally, when they have grand final marathons or Fox footy shows, like, you know, great final quarters.
Never watched it.
As soon as it's 84, I'm like, change the channel. No, never seeing it.
Yeah, and unfortunately for us, her uncle, Gary O'Donnell, is a legend there and all that sort of stuff. So there was always that little link. And in the end, I'll lie and say it wouldn't matter where she went because she's... at Hawthorn. How good's that? And she loves it because she knows the players. The rest of the girls, a lot of them go, you know, the boys train. Sam Mitchell's really embraced it. And I think he got Beck Goddard, the female coach, to help out with Box Hill last year when Sam was coaching there. So on Saturdays, the boys join in for the last 30 minutes with the girls. So how good's that? Yeah. So Jazz is just like going, oh, my God, there's warps and all that sort of stuff. Most of the girls don't know what happened. So eventually one girl said to one guy, hey, so what do you do around here? And big boy goes, I'm the captain.
Now, were you a gun footballer as well as you? So you had a choice to make?
Yes.
were you talking to clubs?
Alan Jeans, the great man, ruined my football career. So played for Springvale, Noble Park, got invited down the Hawks, signed on back then, mid-season. You know, you just sign on before the... It was June 3rd,
kind of
around the financial...
What kind of year we're talking about down here?
About 87. Yep. So there's no chance of me getting a reserves game for Hawthorn back then. They were unreal, weren't they?
Yeah, yeah.
And Ray Biffin was the coach, the hard man there. So I signed on and virtually they just said, do you want to play? Because the night didn't put a lot of credence in their 19s, but their resis. We had a bye, or Hawthorn had a bye, played for Noble, got injured, doing year 12. Signed on a Monday night and on the Wednesday night got put in the Victorian State squad, cricket. So already I start to think, I'm the best 17-year-old cricketer in Victoria and I'm one of 700 footballers, aren't you? So finished, did my HSC, played for Victoria, but I was still young enough to be 19. So they invited me down to run again after I played Victoria. And Russell Green was the coach of the 19s. And we played a full-on practice match. And in the middle was Alan Jeans. And I don't know about you, Trump, but I just revered Alan Jeans. Yeah. And, you know, you'd see him on World of Sport and he'd talk like that. But he had the loudest voice of all time. So I'm playing on the wing. No one knows who I am. Ball kept going and Jeansy just kept going, get in there, number 17. And I'm just thinking, no, get it out to me, Jeansy. I've got quite good skills.
Oh, you're an outside player.
Outside player. I'll hit them beautifully. And I'm basically busting. No, I mean, it's a fair target anyway. And I just remember going, I just want to get off this ground. I'll never play football again. And it was at Glenfree Oval. I don't know if anyone's been there. It's small and it's muddy. And we did that drill that everyone used to hate. You know when the coach kicks it 50 metres out and it's me and you to bring it back? And in the end, I just said, mate, you get this one, I'll get that one. And and walked off and never played footy again. So always better at cricket, though. So
that's good to know
really
that you brought that kind of effort to a sporting field, though. That's I can see why Australia chose
you. And did you bring that culture to the Australian dressing room?
I used to like kick to kick because me and the late, great Shane Warne, and Warney was a superb player. Obviously, he said he was a little bit slow, but he was a great mark and a beautiful kick. We'd put the big, dumb Queenslanders up either end because they'd just play rugby and we'd be taking big hangers on them, but going, yeah, good effort, McDermott. That was really good. Well done, Haydos.
I do love it when they bring the football out before the pregame. Like, I remember years ago, I think Australia was playing at Lords, and I think an English friend of mine was there and I'm just messaging back and forth. And he came back and he said, Glenn McGrath, I can't kick a footy. It's fucked.
Now, obviously, cricket can be quite dull, like test matches and stuff. Do you ever get bored? No, I love cricket. Don't worry. I spend all day at home. But
all day at home.
There are days when it's a road and it's fucking, you know, 2 for 600 or whatever. When you're at final, like, did you just go, fuck this? Like, I'm fucking bored.
Flat pitch, 2 for 600. Yep. You've just led me into my hat trick beautifully.
Picture it. Pakistan. 1994.
Yeah, and I do apologise if details are a little bit sketchy. I haven't spoken about it publicly before.
Now, are you still the only member of the hat-trick on debut club?
No, I was the first.
Yeah.
So we had our golf day 2 weeks ago at Kingston Heath, so I won that again. There's still only me in the club. Got the longest drive, closest to the pin. The only negative is the proposed tennis match can't go ahead because there's no one to fucking return the service. Sure.
I suppose
we need someone in the club.
The poker match probably doesn't go that
way. No, but what I've done, I don't know if anyone follows me on social media, but I write a letter to every debutante since then, inviting them into the club. But I felt bad because the last guy I invited was Big Cam Green. Who took 5 wickets today against Zimbabwe. But I write this letter, you know, sad. I want to get the tennis match going and please invite. And meanwhile, I've written everyone else's name and crossed it out. So the last one was Cam Green a couple of summers ago, but I apologised to him 12 months later because not only did he not get a hat-trick, in his first test match. He didn't get a fucking test wicket for the whole summer. Too much pressure, boys.
Yeah.
So take us through the hat-trick. I actually watched it yesterday. And actually,
it's grainy, isn't it? Very grainy.
I find surprised that... and maybe it was because it was, like, not in Australia, but, like, you didn't seem that excited. And the crowd didn't seem that excited, but it was 3 weeks. Sorry,
you're angry.
Yeah, it was the year before Foxtel.
Okay.
So, 95 West Indies, where we won. That was first one brought on Foxtel. So, it was in... And 9 didn't, obviously, show it. It toured to Pakistan. But for me, it was just getting a baggy green. You know, I was test cap 3-6-1.
Who was your captain when you came in?
Mark Taylor. Tubb. Yep, yep. Tubb chewing his gum. Got a pair in his first test match as captain. But wouldn't have known it. Really great captain.
Did he ever take the gum and rub it into your leg hair?
No, but he drunk a lot of piss. Okay. Tubb, yeah. He was a bit... But, you know...
Does he give you a good deal on a fujitsu every now and then?
Never. Never. I think once he can pronounce it properly, he'll open it up to ex-players. But, yeah, mate, I mean, all you want to do is get another test match, don't you? So I got 4 wickets in the first innings with Craig McDermott. Sent him in and, yeah, they were about 2 for 600. Got the ball, got on a hat-trick and just thought... the guy I was bowling to was a guy called Salim Malik, who was the Pakistan captain... who later got banned for life for match-fixing and throwing his wicket. But he's 237.
Also gave away wickets, did he?
I think we found a hole in this story.
I'm on debut, mate. Here's a couple of lazy...
Yeah, I mean, I did find it weird that all of a sudden after that tour you were driving around in a Ferrari.
He's a good man. He's a good man. But it's sort of weird. It all goes in slow-mo. Like, I'm going, I'm no chance here. It's flat as. And I turned to Craig McDermott at mid-on, going, Billy, Salim doesn't know it yet, but he's going to become part of history. And Billy looks at me like I'm a fucking idiot. You know, like, and he just nicked it, and then you're through. And we did find it funny in hindsight that he did run off the pitch, jump in the air like he'd won something. But it's in wisdom, so I'll take it, lads.
That's fantastic. Now, obviously, we need to talk to you about the 99 semi-final. Win against South Africa. How much did you hate South Africa? Or
yes.
Do you get along well with the players?
No.
You didn't really?
No, we did actually. Socialised a lot. Because remember, 93-94, it was the first tour after they'd been sanctioned because of apartheid. It was massive. And then we went over there and I got there late for the one days and they were like rock stars.
Yep.
You know, it was just massive everywhere. But we built a big rivalry from that series. Mm. So going in, they were probably the number one rated team, South Africa, in that World Cup. I remember our team base was Cardiff, Captain Steve Waugh, Coach Jeff Marsh, went through, you know, KPIs, key performance, all that sort of stuff. But the only thing we remember was Jeff Marsh at the end of the meeting mentioned the 3 words what every Australian cricketer didn't want to hear, and it wasn't Warn tech scandal. Because we heard that a friggin' a lot in England. Don't worry about that. Warner used to slay them. He was the king.
The great man.
SK. But no, Jeff Marsh said the 3 words: total drinking ban.
No,
Australian
cricket. This is the fucking Australian cricket team.
Jesus Christ!
So in the history of lead balloons, this is the heaviest lead. Blokes, you can see him just going like, Mark, what did he just say that? And the guys are kicking chairs, and Darren Lehman started crying like people can say.
Next he's going to bang.
He don't want to play. Oh,
get him out of here.
So there's a bit of indecision and we lost to Pakistan, lost to New Zealand. Our only win was against a full strength Scottish team that we beat that day.
How'd you go against Kenya? Kenya?
Scotland and Kenya, I think they took up cricket a month before the tournament, so we were there. But yeah, and in the end, the semi was against South Africa. And as I said, they were like the number one rated team, yep. South Africa. So,
but they were renowned up to that point for being a little bit choky, weren't they?
Well, afterwards, massive chokers.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is probably the game that they really haven't recovered from. And, mate, we scored about 200. They were numb for 50. So they're cruising to the final against Pakistan. And that's when the ball gets thrown to Warney. Warney... In a famous team, he was the most famous player, wasn't he? Yeah, no one had more charisma than Warney. You know, he was just he was a rock star. And he was famous and he wanted fame and he handled it really well. Also on the field, you know, we needed wickets. The ball got thrown to him, and he was an amazing player. He had an incredible strike rate. He was always stalking the opposition, and he hardly ever missed out. And he's pretty good on the field as well. Probably better off the field. And the great man... The great man, actually, he did like when I used to say that because it's all advertising for SK back then. Yeah. And I also told him this one. If you do look at the highlights of these three deliveries that Warnie bowled, I do call them...
Which I did watch recently.
So you know what we call them? The Liz Hurleys. They're absolute crackers.
They fucking are. You know, unbelievable.
He gets Gibbs like a gadding ball. We don't talk. He gets Kirsten through the gate. He gets Cronier, even though it bounces off his foot. Fuck off, fucking, back to the dressing room.
You fucking cheat.
So
probably got a bit of money for that one as well, didn't he?
Is this the match fixing special? It's a special.
It is.
Crony had to go. He had a plane to catch, so he had to.
Fucking! I can't believe I'm going to say you've taken it too far.
Oh, really?
Is that it? If you. But it got to the last over. I'm bowling it. Yeah, nine.
Did you know that was coming up as well?
Yeah, like, well, when you're the the number rated death bowler in the team.
Yeah, right.
You got McGrath, you got Warne, but you give
one
it to
thing
Fleming.
I was thinking about today, why is it seems to be like kind of a medium fastest bowling the final over? Like you don't send in like a Sean Tate Wild thing to do that final over. Like it's
well, he was 5 years of age at the time.
I know,
so
and also, unless you wanted like four wides,
no,
you don't send Sean Tate.
It's a good question.
But I just mean like, why? You know, how do you get that job as the bowling the final?
So always, I say it in business, in sport, find a niche for yourself. On a serious note, and then make yourself more attractive to selectors or employers. And for me, I wanted to be the best death bowler for South Melbourne, get picked for Victoria, and do it for Australia. And in my third game, which was Alan Border's last game in South Africa. He gave me the ball, 6 to win. They only got 4. So I was sort of entrusted with that job. Thanks, Mum. Thanks for coming. And there's... But you think about it, there is specific skills. And as great as Glenn McGrath, you know, robotic, you know, unbelievable line and length and all stuff, he didn't probably have as good a Yorker or change of pace as me. And they're the sort of skills that you do at the desk. So, yes, I did know I was bowling that. They had a guy called Klusner who ended up getting man of the match, man of the series. But 9 to win with 6 balls to go. I generally back myself if they needed more to 8 runs. We come up with a plan of coming around the wicket bowling Yorkers to make him reach for that. So I wasn't keen on that, but did it. Come around the wicket. And crowd's going nuts, like a World Cup semi. 40,000 people. 10 of my teammates said, come on, Flemmo, I'm proud. Release it about 85 miles an hour. He hits it about 500 miles an hour into the cover fence, right? So 5 balls to go. Now they only need 5 runs. We still need that one wicket. As I'm running in, probably only 5 teammates. Some come on, Flemmo. Like they drop off you. They drop off. Same sort of thing.
But in the moment, are you like, oh fuck? Like that shouldn't.
No, that's coming up. That's coming up. That's after this ball.
Okay, right.
So I released it, and this one's a bit of a half volley. He smashes it 1,000 miles an hour under cover fence. So it's a tie. With 4 balls to go, they
so
only need
2
one.
Balls, 2 fours.
2 fours, right?
The best death bowler in the world.
The best death bowler. Who's getting forced to bowl around the wicket.
Yeah, against your will.
And so people go, what goes through your head at that highly stressful situation? I reply as a, highly trained athlete of 10 years first class experience. All that mental psych training you get kicks in, you get into your IPS, ideal performance state. Use PM positive momentum your way. Every motivational book you've ever read, How to Score Birdies on and Off the Course by Tiger Woods. Keep It Real and Win by Lance Armstrong. All these kicks in when you need it most, boys. And my only thought was, we're fucked. We're in real trouble. We're in real trouble, lads. And then luckily for me, guess who's at mid-off? Steve Waugh, the most mentally tough athlete that I played. We called him the Iceman. So I said to the Iceman, what do you think? He goes, I reckon we're fucked. So there's times you've got to take control. I grabbed the ball. I said to Steve Waugh, mate, I want to come over the wicket, not around. Steve Waugh goes, yeah, whatever. You know, his bags are packed. There's
he's
no final
up.
For
he's
Steve.
He's given up.
So come over the wicket. ran in, a bit of a half tracker. Klusner mishits and just starts running. So the run out's on. Ball goes to Darren Lehman. He misses the start. He's only a metre away, misses by 2 metres. And we would have been into the World Cup final. But interesting how pressure changes. They don't communicate, Donald and Klusner, with the near run out. If we were batting with a war twin, we'd go back through the next two balls, try and get a single off the last ball. But it's funny how pressure changes. Ran in, next ball, bought a good Yorker. I belatedly put my hand up. And he jogs to, and he just runs. He doesn't call. He just wants to finish at Klusner.
They didn't call.
No call. And it's near my hand, but I don't get it.
Yep.
So Donald stays in his crease. Mark Warfields has a go at the stumps. I get it, and I proceeded to underarm it to poor Adam Gilchrist because it's going about a centimetre an hour. It's that slow. I had enough time to run behind him going, don't fucking miss that ball kill, all right? And then he hits the stumps and we're through. And really, with those tough games against South Africa, I think you know going into the final that you're going to win, and we did, and we demolished Pakistan. Yeah. And for me, it was the whole other career.
Congratulations.
We'll wrap it up with you shortly, Flam. I mean, you mentioned, you know, Steve Waugh, Shane Warne. But you, am I right that you roomed with Merv a bit, or you travelled with Merv a bit? Or
yeah, so we're talking to Lloydo about having the room. It just feels so weird that they go, oh, we're grown men, but you two can sleep together in the same room. It just feels odd.
Who did Lloydo room with?
Scotty Lucas once, and he snored a lot, and he never had to do it again.
He snored a lot. Yeah. Mervyn Hughes. I got picked straight out of school. Week later, I'm rooming with Merv, okay? And normally with state trips, you do two trips and you'd swap around, but I don't know what I did wrong. I had him for 6 years, all right? Nothing prepares you for seeing Merv Hughes naked for the first time. So his diet, we didn't have an alarm clock because he had a natural one. I won't say it was, but it was loud and you could smell it in China, all right? But a favourite one with Merv was... it's when he took 13 wickets against the West Indies, you know, and Alan Board is the most famous player, but Merv's probably the second most. So he took 13 wickets against West Indies, including taking a hat-trick in only his eighth test match, which is pretty quick to take a test, only seven tests slower than me. So we're back for a state game in Perth, and we're at the night, you know, you'd bowl them out and you get on the piss that night because you're batting the next day. So we're lining up, I think it was Rumours or Gobbles, whatever it was called. And the boys are into Merv going, get us in, get some drink cards and we'll get on the piss. And Merv didn't like to, you know, show himself. He'd go, Mark, we'll be right, 10 minutes. 10 minutes on, still lining up. And boys go, Merv, get up there. And he goes, all right. So he starts walking up. Lucky for Merv. Bouncer sees him. Yeah, mate, how many? Merv looks behind. Yeah, six. No worries. So we all walk in. As Merv walks in, he pats the bouncer on the back, going, mate, thanks a lot for that. And the bouncer goes, no worries, Dipper. Have a good night.
Now, did you play in the era when test matches had a rest day?
No, how good would that have been?
So you missed that. So they play. What they play 3 days and have a little break.
And what they'd said they'd do, they'd have a quiet Saturday at night and just get on the piss all Sunday. So they hung over Monday. But it was the tour before I went to England that they still had that Sunday rest period.
Yeah, right. That's a shame you missed it. Now we haven't let Flem taste the. So we've been. This is a beer from Adelaide. It's a chicken salt beer. And so we taste tested it before. So you don't have to, but...
I think it's shit.
And you haven't even tasted it?
I haven't tasted it. Yeah.
Do you want to crack?
Give it a little nibble.
So what's it called? Is it a lager or...?
It's a ghost.
It's a ghost. So it's from Big Shed Brewery. We got a fascination with chicken salt.
So what's your deal? Oh, you're not sponsored by around
that? No.
Certainly
no.
Not now. Thoughts?
Fuck, even Booney wouldn't drink that. What is that?
On that note, please thank Damien Flam.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks so much, Flam. That was great, man. And best of luck to Jazz for the rest of the Hawthorn season. I'm going to work out which one's the chicken salt beers and which one's the... I'll put this one over here. I'll get this one here. Is that yours? No, that's chicken salt as well.
That's chicken salt, yeah.
Okay. I might. Should we get a. Is there a freshie?
Yeah, there's a couple of freshies there.
Grab a freshie here. Moon Man.
No one's going to be drinking them.
Cold one. Dudes, the hits keep on coming. We have Matthew Lloyd, the legendary Damien Fleming. Please welcome on stage a Geelong and North Melbourne hero, the one and only Cameron Mooney!
Hello, everybody.
How's it going?
Fuck. How good's Flem? Seriously.
Yeah.
Could have put me before him. Fuck, now I'm not going to be funny.
I mean, Adam's used to that, so don't worry about it.
I've actually done a few gigs with Flem, and seriously, I've come on second every time, and the room just goes flat.
Yeah, Adam's used to that as well.
Now, the person who does that the most, apparently, is Sam Kekovich. So he's got, apparently, he's one of the best, sportsman's night talkers you'll ever hear. And he has this thing where he's always like, I've got to catch a flight, I've got to go. And he always goes on first and fucking smokes the room, like absolutely destroys it. And Limo was on with him one night. And so he goes, all right, thanks, everyone. And the crowd's fucking, oh, that was unbelievable. And he goes to leave. And so they go, here's Limo. Limo gets on stage. Sam Kekovich comes back in the room. He's at the door at the back of the room and just starts telling another story while Limo's on stage. So everyone's like looking around going, this is the fucking best thing ever. And just slays them again and then goes, all right, take it easy. And then they go, oh, fucking now it's Limo.
I think Flemo told me a story ages ago that Rodney Hogg got up before him. Does everyone know Rodney Hogg, the great cricketer?
Yeah.
Great storyteller, but apparently he killed it this night. And he thought he'd try a new gag out and it went down like a fucking lead balloon. And he walked off to Flemo and goes, good luck, mate. just flattened the room and said, good luck.
Now, I don't know if you saw Flemo do the drink before. We are fascinated by a chicken salt beer. Would you be inclined to taste a bit of the chicken salt beer?
It'd be rude not to, wouldn't it?
You keep talking at it.
Has anyone ever tried this?
None of the audience have, but we are going to give him a bit of a crack.
There's
once
a chance
the show
it might
finishes.
Be sprayed all over you in a second.
I'll get you a fresh cup, so we're COVID safe.
So why is this all of a sudden becoming?
So
thing?
Yeah, so we talked about earlier in the show with Matthew. We about I don't know 5-6 years
yeah,
ago.
Yeah, we were Adam fascinated at when you play at Footy Park. It always have that Mitani chicken salt thing behind the goals, and we were kind of into it. Like, why are they advertising this? And it's a big thing in Adelaide. And then this brewery brought out a beer that's flavoured like chicken salt because absolutely no one fucking asked for it. And so they brought it out.
We got anyone here from Adelaide? That's good. That's good.
So give it a sniff first and kind of get the sense of it.
I've never been a big chicken salt fan.
Get the fuck out of here, cunt!
Thoughts?
Well, I think Flem's carrying on a bit there. That was all right.
You're, I think it's all right.
It wasn't too
You wouldn't
bad.
Have another one, though,
No,
would you?
I would not, no.
I'll give the tale of the tape for Cam Mooney. 221 games at North and Geelong, 297 goals. Premierships 1999, 07, 09, All Australian 2007. Coaches Award in 2004. Suck.
There was actually one in 11 as well. They forgot about that one.
And then I think we need a... Okay. First player to be suspended 4 times in one season after getting reported
in
4 separate matches. That deserves a standing ovation. Stand up.
Come on.
Stand up.
Come on. Our game is 150 years old and I own that record.
How did that go down after your 4th suspension?
Oh, it didn't go down well at all.
Because it was 2006, I think.
2006. So 2006, we got Geelong supporters here. There, get a couple. So 2006 was a horrible year.
Yeah.
From a footy club point of view. We were supposed to make finals. We were supposed to almost probably win a grand final. And then just everything went pear-shaped. We were still a very... Oh, God, how do you put it? We were piss drinkers, basically.
Right.
We were unprofessional. We still loved a good time. We were a young list. And, you know, instead of being professional and everything going well, it just went backwards. And then I was starting to get frustrated and... One suspension led to another and to another and to another.
4?
Yes.
Okay.
And I think...
So you started... You started.
A lot of them weren't my fault. Just
of course.
Just
no, I do believe
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I got that feeling, mate.
Yeah. So you start... You're from Wagga and then you get drafted to North Melbourne. So was the Wayne Carey aura just massive in your world?
Oh, absolutely. So Duck's a Wagga boy. So growing up, you know, he was obviously the biggest name. But you look at Wagga. I mean, Wagga, seriously... You had Carey, you had Paul Kelly. Then you look at cricket, you had Michael Slater, Mark Taylor, Jeff Lawson. You had rugby guys, the Mortimer boys, Scobie Beasley, Jockey. So many of these stars just came out of Wagga. So it was a fantastic place to grow up. And And then when I got to North Melbourne, I went to Canberra for a year. So I had to go there as a 16-year-old. Anyone lived in Canberra? You don't fucking go there. Worst year of my life, Canberra.
So why did they send you there?
Well, so we had to play in the under-18s competition. So New South Wales, ACT, got a team in the under-18s competition. So we played in that, and we all got, about six or seven of us got moved to Canberra for a year, yep. Lived there, got billeted out to other families, and all of those type of things. But lucky enough, I had a pretty ordinary year, in all honesty. I was up and down. But I had a really good game in our first practice game, which happened to be a curtain raiser before North Melbourne and Sydney. And Dennis and all the coaches were there watching. And I had a good game. That's virtually what I got drafted from, that game.
Yeah, right.
And then I moved down to Melbourne as a 17-year-old boy. And I walked into a football club, and we talk about cultures at footy clubs. North's culture was a piss-drinking culture. Yeah. Like, that's what they did. They played and hard. Thanks, Fev.
And not just that.
They played hard, they drank hard.
They partied hard.
They partied
hard. They barbecued hard.
They did. You know? They...
They went to the toilet
hard. They found an ensuite. They found your vice captain's missus. Yeah. Cheap gag. Thanks, Fev. So that was North. And, yeah, Duck was, you know, all piss farting around the side. Duck was the greatest player I've ever seen play the game.
But did he run the joint? Like, I mean, they talk
hands
about...
Hands down.
I mean, you know, talk about Pagan, you know, there's a whole bunch of, you know, six prelims, I think, in a row and stuff like that. But I've heard a few stories from North people kind of go like, yeah, Pagan, great, fine. But Duck actually ran the
Duck game. Look, he's the greatest player. And
even better than Gary Ablett Jr.
Oh, yes.
Really?
Yeah. No, even better Duck's the best player I've ever seen play.
Even better than Zach Dawson?
We're probably just sitting under him there, Zach. But
did you learn a lot from him, like, as a player?
Yeah, what's the influence like?
Yeah.
On the ground. No, training and all that. Well, yeah, you do. I mean, I was in awe of him. We all were. He's the best player in the comp, and he walks into a room. He's got an aura about him straight away. So we loved him as a player, as a bloke. You know. But as a player, he was just absolutely brilliant. Absolutely loved watching him play. Loved watching him train. You know, it's funny because this is where we ran the club. So after every game, Dennis Pagan would go through every player. And he was brutal, Dennis, like the most brutal man I've ever met. We had a loss this year. It was in 99. We played the Bulldogs, and we had a bad loss. And I reckon it was about my sixth or seventh game. And he's going through every player, and he'd go, Arch, you know, you're as weak as piss today. Mickey Martin, you're supposed to be the strong man. You got thrown around. Sholey, fucking hopeless. Yeah, Steve-O, fuck, he got run around by Westie. Wayne, just wasn't your day today, Wayne. Fuck it, you were shit. Fuck off. Right, unbelievable. So from then on, we all knew fucking Wayne was the king.
I love the idea that Dennis Pagan's now obviously a horse trainer, won the Caulfield Cup a couple of years ago, I think. I love the idea that, like, he gave the players a bake. I'd love to see the bake he gives a horse. Yeah. Like, if they come forth,
they'd know about it.
Well, how was so 99? So 99 was my one and only year of playing senior footy. I was there for 3 years, but played one senior footy for that year, and I was lucky enough to play in a grand final. So, any North fans here? You'd know my day. I was a fucking really good player that day. Had zero, just so everyone knows, I had zero possessions that day.
So what's it like going back to the reunion for that? When they're like,
I haven't been.
Oh, really?
I don't know anyone's ever got. Been. No one's ever got negative Norm Smith medal votes.
Well, I actually did, because what happened was, so I got dropped for the prelim the week before. So I'm sitting in the grandstand. I'm having a beer with the boys, thinking my season's over. Who cares? 5 minutes to go. Jason McCartney, if anyone remembers, in the prelim against Brisbane. Bang, hits Clark Keating, breaks his jaw. Everyone in the stand goes, Jace, no. I'm like, fucking yes, Jace. So I'm straight home, had a great sleep, trained the house down that week. Dennis grabs me by the arm on a Thursday night and just says, you're in, son, and walked off. I thought, great pep talk, Dennis. Thank you. Anyway, so I rock up to the MCG. I'm playing against Carlton, who I barracked for as a kid. These are all my heroes. So I'm walking on the MCG, the first time I ever walked on there in front of 90,000 people, and I shit myself. I was a 19-year-old kid, had no idea what I was doing. I'm walking down the punt road end, because I started on that round that day. I had Carey, the greatest player ever, Corey McKernan, superstar, Craig Scholl, Shannon Grant was about to win the Norm Smith, Winston Abraham, all these guys. I'm thinking, what am I doing here?
Yeah.
So I've lined up against Michael Sexton, had him on my wall 3 years earlier. This is how much I loved him. And I'm thinking, do I get an autograph or do I get a care for him? Anyway, 5 minutes in, I get dragged. I spend the rest of the day on the bench. So as I finally get back on...
Three quarters on the bench.
More than three quarters, I can tell you that. So 5 minutes to go. We're 40 points up. The game's won. I finally get the call to come back on. By this stage, I'm fuming. So I've run on, and Simon Beaumont just ran in front of me as I ran onto the ground and tried to bump me. And I've lifted an elbow and hit him right in the back of the ear and dropped him to the ground.
Good, the low fucking dog.
Exactly. Umpire saw it, blew the whistle, free kick, I get dragged straight back off. Anyway, so this is about 4 minutes to go now. We've won the game. I get the phone handed to Mr. Dennis, and he fucking lets rip. Just calls me everything. Says my mum and dad made a mistake having me. Like, seriously, the shit that came out of his mouth, it was unbelievable. So I threw the phone down in disgust. I'm sitting next to John Longmire. So we're sitting there, and Horse goes to me about 10 seconds later. He goes, what the fuck's that noise? And we realise Dennis still spraying the shit out of him and the phone. Anyway, and then I run across the oval. I had Anthony Stevens on my back because he busted his ankle up the week before. So I'm carrying him across, and I'm hugging everybody. I'm crying. I'm a 19-year-old boy from Wagga who just played in a premiership. And I'm hugging everyone. I'm watching Dennis. He hugs everybody. Didn't hug me.
No. No.
Anyway, we finally get our medals up on the dais, and I'm about to walk off, and this is the greatest day of my life. And Dennis grabs me by the arm, and he just said, just learn something from today, son.
Yeah, walked off. I learn I hate your fucking guts, mate.
I learn
saying that after he said it, and I did. I hated him for it, because 3 days later I was traded down Geelong.
Because you were part of the famous Lee Colbert trade.
So what happened was, 3 days later, I get the call from my manager, Ron Joseph. So I go down to his office. Say, Ronnie Joseph is managing Lee Colbert. Now, Lee Colbert's one of the greatest people you've ever met. So he's walked down to the footy club, and Gary Ayres has just walked down to the footy club, the coach. So the coach and the captain have walked out of Geelong. Mark Bomber-Thompson, who was the reserves coach at North Melbourne that year. Yes, absolute legend. So we struck up this amazing friendship. He gets the job and he goes, well, come down with me. If you want Colby, you've got to give me Moons. So you can see how this went down. So I had a great meeting with Bomber. Come down. And I said, well, yes, it'd be nice, but, you know, I'm a North Melbourne player.
Yeah,
you know,
through and through.
My name's on the locker, you know. Like, Jesus.
Pags loves me.
You know, well, Pags walks in 20 minutes later. And I go to get him. He goes, don't get up, son. And he goes, now, we would never ask you to leave because you're a North Melbourne Premiership player. But shit, wouldn't it be good down the road there?
Fucking hell.
He goes, that contract they're offering you, we can't offer you that contract. And your brother's playing at Geelong. Wouldn't it be great to play with your brother? Well, listen, it's your decision. Good luck. Walked out. I looked at my manager and went, well, we're off to fucking Geelong. The funny thing was, I still hadn't made the announcement public. So on the Thursday night after the grand final, we have our best and fairest. So we're all in this room together, just as the players and coach. And Dennis is just giving us a bit of a talk, saying, you know, congratulations on a great year, blah, blah. And I hadn't made the announcement. By the way, Moons is off to Geelong, so everyone get around him tonight.
No.
I'm like, fuck, looks like he wants me out of here.
Wow.
But for that to happen, they obviously got Lee Colbert. I went down to Geelong, and I guess the steak knives deal was picked 38 or 39 or something, what it was. Turned out to be that pick was Corey Enright. So it turned out I was the fucking steak knives deal.
Yeah, there we go. There we go.
Corey's the greatest player ever.
So when you get down there, that's the start of the great era for Geelong. So it's like Bartel and Lingy and Gary Ablett Jr.
First year I got there was myself got traded in. We got Joel Corey, Corey Enright, Cameron Ling and Paul Chapman.
Mate.
2 years later we get Ablett, Bartel, Kelly Johnson.
Wow.
So in the space of two drafts, we bring in half a premiership team and then we grow and, we become something that was pretty extraordinary.
So you obviously have that heartbreaking, was it semi-loss against Sydney up
Sydney.
There? And then you had 2006, which wasn't a great year. When was the leading teams bit where you just fucking, everyone went Gary Ablett Jr.? What was that like?
So that was end of 2006 pre-season, started going into 2007. So we brought in leading teams, which were fantastic for us. They're not for everybody, but for us, the right time,
I'm a collective
right
minds
place.
Man, yeah. Personally. But, yeah.
So it was good for us.
Sorry, anyway. I forgot to... every show, I need to do my power stance.
Well, we didn't quite go on the... the camp?
No, didn't do the camp.
No, we didn't do the camp.
The leading teams is about continue...
Stop, start, and doing all that kind of stuff. Yeah. So anyway, we had... a few of us had to get up in front of the group just like this, and I think I went first or second after my great 2006 year of... all my suspension, so I was up first basically, and the boys hit me between the eyes, you know, got to stop doing this, blah 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 blah. And then we got Gary up. The problem with Gary was Gary thought he was a great trainer, he was a great teammate, he was fantastic in the gym, and he was fucking horrible at all of them. So we finally got him. But the thing is, he finished third in the best and fairest, and was still playing in the forward pocket.
Yeah, right.
So we finally had a crack at him, and he walked out of the room basically with the shits, with everyone cried. And, but to his credit, because we told him, we said, look, Chris Judd's the best player in the competition at that stage. And we said, we believe you could be our Chris Judd. He came back.
Trained a busy ambassador.
Yes, well.
I don't know about that.
Well, I think he was more of a Costa ambassador. Maybe a Cotton when he came back.
Yeah, what, he could own a company called Jagged? I can't believe it.
So we gave it to him between the eyes. He came back, trained the house down, and then, in my personal opinion, he probably should have won the Brownlow from 2007, 8, 9, 10.
He was unbelievable, wasn't he?
He should have won those four in a row, and then he left, and I think he probably should have won at least two more up in the Gold Coast.
Yeah.
That's my opinion, anyway.
And how great was it to break the drought in 2007 down at Geelong? You're living down there, obviously?
Well, I'm still living down there. It was incredible. I mean, 44-year drought.
The heartbreak of the 90s, the late 80s.
The heartbreak of the 90s and all of that stuff. And when I got to the footy club, I mean, the club was $10 million in debt. The stadium was falling over. The town wasn't a great town to be at. And then over time, it's just turned into one of the great clubs, one of the great stadiums, and we're seeing what's going on there now. And it's turned into, I think, one of the most beautiful towns, you know, in Australia, if not the world. So it's just been a fantastic ride down there in the last 20 years.
How was it in the town after you won?
Oh, it was fucking mayhem.
So we drove in.
I think there was cars
tipped.
After
the game, you went back to Geelong that night?
Went back to Geelong that night, went into town and just...
Dude.
Yeah.
Go to Lemmy's or the Stinks?
Well, fucking
or...
both Lemmy's. Fucking hope. I hadn't bought a drink for fucking 3 years. I don't forget. But no, it was great. I mean, it's what we needed. Like I said, 44 years and then the obviously having those losses from, you know, 89, 92, 94, 95, I think it was. Mm. It was a heartbreaking place to be, so we needed to do it.
And then I'm trying to think, like, at three-quarter time, you were 90 points up.
So it was close.
What does Bomber say to the group at three-quarter time of a grand final when you're 90
Where are we going
up?
Tonight, boys?
Yeah, well, I mean, I
She's
actually...
on.
At the time, at the game, I was at the game, and I was like, they're 90 points up. Like, what literally is the coach saying to that group right now, apart from, like...
It was very boring, because he just
I
said...
I don't know, like, just...
Don't be arrogant. He said, don't be arrogant. Don't carry on. If you kick a goal, just try and be humble.
Yeah.
So Andrew Mackey kicks the first goal and takes his fucking shirt off. And carrying on like an idiot. But it was a boring message. I mean, the 09 one was probably the better message at three-quarter time. We've got Saints fans here.
Well, don't rub it in. Don't make them cry. They've had a tough go.
The best team that I think's never won a premiership in my time. It probably doesn't make it any easier.
So that was a year that you were both 13 and Zip?
13 and Zip going into round 14. Played in front of, I think, 50,000 at Etihad. And the best home and away game I've ever played
in.
How was the noise?
It was incredible.
Off the charts. Yeah.
Like the 04 semi-final against Sydney. No, 05, sorry, when Nick Davis kicks those goals.
Yeah.
That was the greatest atmosphere I've ever been involved in.
Yeah, right.
Like, that was just electric. And we were on the losing side. But down here at Etihad, it was incredible. 50,000. Two big teams, and it was a cracking game. I mean, that's half the problem when you get those games, usually shit games.
Yeah.
Like we saw on Sunday, you know, big build-up, great game. You know, that's what you want, and that's what we got.
Very funny results.
I left you a three-quarter time thinking, well done, mate, you've had a good win.
Yeah, good on Rosie. See you in September, mate. Yeah.
See you next week.
Not going to happen.
So you were just talking about Bomber at three-quarter time in 2009.
So 2009, we've obviously come off... Well, I'll go back to the 08 one in a minute, but we came off that 08, sorry. So in 09... Three-quarter time, the game's close, and what he said was basically, remember how you felt walking off the ground 12 months earlier and how crushed you all were. You know, he pointed to me and said, you were crying and blah, 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 and this and that.
Yeah, all right, mate.
And he just let us have it. He just says, do not walk off the field without a medal around your neck.
As a Hawthorn supporter, I remember leaving the ground pretty fucking happy.
And we end up having this amazing quarter of footy. But we'll go back to 08, shall we? Any other Hawthorn fans here?
G'day, how are you?
Yeah, just over here.
You're all fuckwits. Okay. Half time, don't want to talk about it. No, you don't have to talk about it if you don't want to talk about it. We're not here for pain.
So we go into that game. I think we've lost one game for the year. So we're the best team in the competition. And we get there and we're playing this young Hawthorn team that In all honesty, it was an unbelievable final series and great year, bro. But they weren't ready to be the powerhouse. That's what we saw years later.
Get the fuck off this stage.
That's
right
what
now.
We saw later. It was like us in basically like in 04. We got beaten by Brisbane in 04 in the prelim by about 9 points.
I know what you mean.
We almost pinched the grand final. Yeah. So they pinched the grand final, and then they became the powerhouse when they became older and mature.
Three in a row.
So anyway, we go into that game. We're all pretty confident. Anyway, I think I've kicked 2 goals in the first quarter. I don't know if you remember those 2 goals. They were fucking outstanding goals. Anyway, I'm going in at quarter time, and Kenny Hinckley walked up to me and goes, "How you feeling?" I said, "Mate, call me Norm Smith because I'm fucking flying." And I had Trent Crowe on me who had a busted foot, so I knew he couldn't keep up with me. The only problem, I should have kicked 4 or 5 in the first, but Hodgie was playing that role in front of me, all that kind of stuff. So as second quarter starts, I take another mark on the boundary line, swing in, kick Paul Chapman on the left, bang, right in the middle of the ground, he kicks another goal. I'm thinking, fucking Norm Smith, here I am. I've got this wrapped up. So the game's going along.
So just to be clear, you're not getting ahead of yourself.
No. And the problem was, just before the game, there was a cameraman in the change rooms. This is how ahead of the game we were. There's a guy in the change room who takes all the photos, and I said to him, just during the warm-up, this is how arrogant and stupid we were, because this is how good we thought we were. I said, mate, just make sure you get a photo of me and the cup in my son.
Well, could I actually...
Like, seriously, that's how stupid we were. We're too busy organising the after party.
Could I ask the question, though, because I have heard stories, like, could you confirm or deny the fact that maybe some Geelong players were talking about the tattoos that we're going to get?
Oh, we literally were talking about the celebrations.
Dude.
We just thought we had it won. That was...
Like, book a room at Lammy's.
Yeah, all that kind of stuff. We were stupid, the way we handled it. Very stupid. So, anyway... Half time comes around. Just before half time, I take a mark in the goal square. So, anyone remember Scotty Claren, the umpire? Bald head, big nose. Fucking shocking umpire. Shit umpire. So, anyway, I've taken the mark. Siren goes. I've lined up. So, as I'm lining up, he's put me on this angle. And I thought, well, I still should have kicked the goal. But I'm lined up this angle. I'm thinking, as I'm walking in, I'm going to start a fight. I thought, how good is this going to be? I'm going to kick 3 goals at half time. I've got this game dominated. Trent Crowe's off with a busted foot. There's no one that could man me at the moment because I actually did feel like I had the game in the scruff of my in the palm of my hand. So as I'm lining up, I'm thinking, right, what are we going to do here? I'm going to kick my third. I'm going to run through. Grant Birch was on the mark. I'm going to go fucking whack right in his nose. Because standing right there was Luke Hodge, who was killing us. He was absolutely killing us. I thought, the best thing is here, Hodge is going to run in, and I'm just going to go fucking bang. Campbell Brown's sitting behind him. He's going to run in. Everyone wants to hit fucking Brown. Behind them, I had Steve Johnson and Paul Chapman, and these boys can all go. So I'm thinking, right, this is going to be the best day of my life. I'm going to kick 3 goals. I'm going to start an all-in at halftime in a grand final. How fucking good is this? So as I'm running in, I'm looking up, and I'm thinking, Grant, you're fuck bang. I'm going to hit him. If Jeff Kennett had been hanging over, I would have fucking hit him too. Every time. Thing is, as I've gone to kick it, I've looked at Birch to see where he was, and I kicked the fucking thing sideways. Turned out to be the worst day of my life.
Can I ask quickly, we'll let you go very shortly, but in 2007, Crazy John, like who was still alive at the time, but he offered $1 million for a player to kick 10 goals in the grand final, and then he offered $1 million if a player got 5 tries in the NRL grand final. And I remember thinking, were you aware of that at the time?
No, I kicked 5 that year.
You had 5 at three-quarter time, if I remember correctly. And I remember, at the game, I have very vivid memories of the 07 Grand Final for some reason. But
I'm sure this is true, because you did make up a story about Matthew Lloyd sleepwalking. So.
He's had a lot of knocks to the head, mate. But I actually did think at three-quarter time, like, you know, if the players knew that, like, they'd give you a few Joe the Gooses over the top, so you get to 10.
If there was a million, don't worry, I would have been telling everyone to get the fuck out of the
floor. Yeah, just get away.
Don't worry about that.
Now, you played with Nathan Ablett. And
oh, yes.
What's he like as a human?
Oh, Nathan. Nathan is a great enigma. You just don't know what he could have been, what he should have been.
Because he didn't really want to play footy,
no,
did he?
No, he didn't. We had to basically drag him down there when he was about 20 years of age. And I honestly, hand over heart, he could have been one of the greatest players we've ever seen play the game. He had all the ability in the world. He's 6'4". You know, 98 kilos, was quick, smart as hell on a footy field. Not so much. Not
hell.
So much off the footy field. If he had junior's mentality, we would be talking about, you know, another Carey. you know, better than Carey. Like, he was just phenomenal. He really could have been something special. He just didn't want to be there.
Yeah.
You know, he was a unit. I mean, there was a time, I think it was 2006 or 7. So at half time, we'd go into a game down at Cadinia Park. And see, we've got a thousand Nathan stories, seriously. So we go in at half time, we do our talk, we go back out into the ground, Nate's starting on the bench. So about 5 minutes into the game, third quarter, the call comes down to get Nathan on. And they've looked down the line, they've realised fucking Nate's not on the bench. So someone said, well, someone go and find him. So as you run up the old race on the Brownlow stand at Geelong, you could either go left into the change rooms or right into the players' room, and out the back is the warm-up room. So the guy ran up and thought, well, he's probably in the toilet. So he's running to the left in the change rooms, not in there, toilet, not in there, out the back here, physio room, not there. He's not in the warm-up room. Shit, he must be in the players' room. So he's walked around the players' room. Finally, there's Nath, sitting on the couch with his boots off, feet up on the bench, eating grapes, watching the game of football that he's supposed to be fucking playing out there. You know, shit like that. I know, so 2005, he was supposed to play in that Sydney game, so that classic Sydney game up there at the SCG that Nick Davis rolled us. So he was supposed to play in that game, and the last minute decided he didn't want to play, just pulled out of the game. So now we've gone out for our warm-up, and as we've come back in, a lot of the boys wear sneakers in the warm-up out on the field, and when they come back in, they change into their boots. Now, James Kelly's one of those guys, so he's gone to get his boots and couldn't find them. So this is 2 minutes before we're about to run out for a final, couldn't find his fucking boots. So anyway, everyone's looking around everywhere, we're looking through bags, under lockers, everything. Finally, Nathan, who'd been upstairs getting a pie and Coke because he's decided he didn't want to play, he's walked back down into the room, pie and Coke in hand. He's walked past fucking Kel, and Kel's just double-looked. He goes, Nathan, what the fuck are you doing? And he goes, what? He goes, you're wearing my fucking boots. And he goes, oh, sorry, mate, I had a suit and I only had sneakers. I didn't want to go upstairs and look stupid. So, you know, we're dealing with Nate doing that. I'll give you a quick one before I go because I love this story. It's about the great Brad Ottens. Now everyone knows Otto. Now, if you've heard this, I'm sorry, but it's a fucking great story. This is why I love this bloke. So Brad Ottens is one of the greatest men you'll ever meet, one of the greatest teammates you'll ever have.
When did he come to Geelong?
So 2005 he came to Geelong. Okay. So end of 2004, we got beaten by Brisbane by 9 points in a prelim. We thought, what do we need? We need a big forward ruckman to help Stephen King out. And Otto wanted out of Richmond. So Bomber starts calling around the players going, look, we're a chance to get Brad Ottens. What are your thoughts? And we thought, well, you know, great player, but there's a story going around that he wasn't that smart. And the story was, so back in 2001 when he was playing at Richmond, they had that really good year, they played in the prelim under Danny Frawley. Anyway, it was about round 6 or 7. They have a big win against Collingwood on a Friday night. And Spud's like, boys, don't go out and do anything stupid. Go and have a couple of beers, but nothing stupid. So anyway, they go out. He gets absolutely rolling drunk with a mate from Adelaide who's been over there. They walk out of a nightclub around here somewhere about 4:30 in the morning, and his mate gets arrested for being drunk in public. Gets thrown in the back of a divvy van. So what do you do when your mate gets thrown in the back of a divvy van? You mouth off at the coppers and you get thrown in too. So Otto's in the divvy van. He's down at the cop shop. This is about 5:30 in the morning. Anyway, he was so drunk that he didn't realise that in his wallet there was contacts. And one of those contacts in the wallet was Danny Frawley. So the sergeant down at the St Kilda cop shop at 5 o'clock in the morning has called Danny Frawley. So Spud's going through the game. He's going through the review of the game. He's had about 3 bottles of wine, so he's plastered himself. He gets a phone call. He's going, hi, this is Sergeant such and such from St Kilda Cop Shop. We've got your boy Brad Ottens down here. Come and get him before, you know, we won't release it to anybody, so we don't want to get him in trouble. So Spud's like, fuck. So he's had to get in a taxi, drive all the way down here to the cop shop. As he's coming in, at this stage, all the piss has started to wear off Otto. And he started to realise he's in the shit. You know, he's thinking, fuck, you know, I've let the family down. My family's going to kill me. The club's going to suspend me. I'm going to get kicked out. All of this, he's starting to sweat and he's panicking. Anyway, at this stage, Danny's Spud's filled out the form. He's walked in, and as Spud's sitting there, I mean, as Otto's sitting there doing these ones, thinking, shit, he hears the door open, and he looks up and he sees Spud. And he goes, oh, fuck, Spud, what'd they get you for? So we heard this story and we thought, we can't have this dumb bastard at our footy club. We got him down there. He played in 3 premierships and he was Mr. September for us. So he's the greatest man ever. So.
On that note, ladies and gentlemen, John Thomas out there.
Thank you, guys.
Cameron Mooney. We want to thank all of our guests tonight. Thanks, Moose, man. Oh, we'll get a quick little snap. Quickly. We want to thank all our guests tonight. Matthew Lloyd, Damien Fleming, Cameron Mooney. Dude, fucking, can you stop looking so fit? You're not meant to be that fit. You're a retired player. Blow out. We're going to hit the road. Thanks, everybody, here at the European Beer Cafe. Thanks to my co-host.
Yeah, thank you, mate. Appreciate it.
We're going to hit the road. Go Hawks.
Go Blues. And if anyone wants to try the chicken salt beer, you're more than welcome to come down the front and